Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, April 9th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the state Senate passes a bill to try to prevent heroin overdoses, Governor Dayton and Minsher, and a big vote on Southwest LRT. The Minnesota Senate has passed legislation aimed at preventing drug-related deaths. Lawmakers voted 65-0 yesterday for the bill that allows first responders and others to administer the overdose antidote known as Narcan. It also provides immunity to people who call for medical help when someone has overdosed, and that part of the bill is somewhat controversial, as Tim Pugmire reports.
Supporters of the two-part measure refer to it as Steve's Law. It's named after Steve Rumler of Edina, who died of a heroin overdose 3 years ago. DFL Senator Chris Eaton of Brooklyn Center, the bill's sponsor, lost a daughter to drugs. Eaton said she thinks both lives could have been saved if the proposed law changes had been in place.
The guy who was with her when she used heroin watched her die, hid paraphernalia, denied to the police he knew what was wrong, and by the time they got naloxone, Narcan, to her, it was too late and she died. That was in 2007 and she was 23 years old.
Under the bill, more people would be able to carry and administer naloxone, which can revive a person who is overdosed on an opiate-like heroin. The legislation includes emergency medical responders, peace officers, and community-based prevention program staffers once they've been authorized by a licensed physician. The other part of the bill is the so-called Good Samaritan provision. Eaton said it encourages people to seek emergency help for someone suffering from a drug overdose without fear of legal consequences.
If you honestly believe somebody with you is overdosing on drugs, you can call 911 for help, and you are immune from prosecution for what is at the scene, for what is there, for the drugs present, for the paraphernalia. If you have other things going on, if the police are investigating you before this ever happens, all of that is still in play.
The unanimous Senate vote came with little debate and in spite of the concerns of some law enforcement groups. James Franklin, executive director of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, said he supports the life-saving concept of the bill, but he thinks the immunity provision is too broad and will hinder investigators.
Theoretically, you know, it's possible that people could commit some very serious type of crime here, but law enforcement would be prohibited from using this evidence.
A companion measure in the House is awaiting final action. DFL Representative Dan Schoen of Cottage Grove is the chief sponsor of the House bill. Schoen, who is a police officer, said he knows passing the law will make a big difference.
I will guarantee you lives will be saved. Next year when we come back, after this bill is going to be passed, we're going to have data from around the state that are going to tell us that up in Couchiching County, they saved a life. You know, that's somebody's kid. That's somebody's grandkid, husband or wife. This is going to make a positive effect.
Schoen is confident about the bill becoming law, but DFL Governor Mark Dayton stopped short of making any commitments. Dayton said he needs to see the final bill before making a decision.
I always want somebody who's in a life-threatening situation to have access to emergency care as rapidly as possible. I mean, there's variations of it, whether this person who's, you know, would be making the call is, you know, on the same drug himself or herself, whether they're a dealer, you know, all those kind of contingencies. So it's hard to make that kind of policy as it applies to 5.3 million people. But, you know, they're making the best effort to do it, and I'm open to looking at it.
Similar immunity and naloxone measures are now law in Wisconsin. On Monday, Wisconsin Republican Governor Scott Walker signed them as part of a package of 7 bills known as Heroin Opiate Prevention and Education. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Governor Dayton says Republican critics of Minsher are waging a propaganda campaign to try to destroy the program. He says he won't allow members of his administration to testify at an oversight hearing today on the state's online health insurance exchange. Republicans say they want administration officials to answer questions about why Minsher launched with so many problems. But Dayton says it's all a political issue for this fall's campaign. Tom Scheck has more.
The disagreement over MNsure focuses on time. Republicans argue that millions of dollars were spent to create the online healthcare exchange and the system failed to deliver. They want answers about what went wrong. Democrats, like Governor Dayton, say there were problems, but the system is now working much better. He says the focus should be on moving the program forward. Republicans want to use today's Legislative Oversight Committee hearing to focus on the problems that plague the website since it went live in October. On Tuesday, Dayton dismissed the criticism and said Republicans are looking to trash MNsure.
It's a farce. They're making a mockery of the word oversight. Oversight means you look objectively, fairly at what's really going on. And now that there's good news about MNsure, they want to go back and dredge up what's happened over 6 months ago.
Republicans have spent months criticizing MNsure's rollout. The website failed nearly from the start. People couldn't create accounts. Consumers were also forced to wait hours on the phone. Many eventually bypassed the website and got coverage directly from insurers. A Star Tribune story this week also said Dayton knew about the website's problems in September, yet the rollout continued. Dayton said he was told about the problems that month, but said the recommendation was to move forward.
In hindsight, I think that was the right decision. I mean, again, I didn't have any inkling of persisting problems until the middle of November. The first 6 weeks, MNsure, from everything that was visible and everything I was told, was having its issues, its problems, but they were taking care of those. The main problems were the federal site was dragging it down too often.
MNsure's original executive director resigned in December as the problems continued to mount. Since then, a new interim executive director was hired. 169,000 people enrolled in health insurance by the March 31st deadline. And now, Dayton wants to pivot the conversation towards the positive aspects of the Affordable Care Act. Republican Representative Tara Mack of Apple Valley is a member of the MNsure Oversight Committee. She says reviewing the record is still important.
I don't think we want to make it look bad. I think that it's doing that on its own to a certain extent, and if people aren't going to acknowledge that, if the governor's not going to acknowledge the issue, somebody needs to, otherwise we're failing Minnesotans.
Max says she wants to know greater detail about MNsure's budget, when decisions were made about the website, and why leaders continued to move forward.
I would think it would be in the governor's best interest and our best interest in the legislature to make sure we're delivering a good product to the people of Minnesota. A lot of promises were made last spring about this being the Travelocity of health insurance, and I think we're far from that right now.
Mack isn't the only Republican raising questions about MNsure. It's been a major talking point for Republican candidates for governor. Republican Senator Dave Thompson of Lakeville is one of several Republicans looking to challenge Dayton in November.
So what I hope the Democrats would add to their agenda this session is to try to implement some bipartisan fixes to make this MNsure problem just a little bit better.
For his part, Dayton and DFL legislative leaders aren't ready to make any changes to MNsure. Dayton said more people are getting insurance that has better coverage.
Evaluate its success or failure 6 months into the undertaking is just, really short-sighted and unrealistic. It's going to take a couple of years to get these things ironed out, to get it working the way it should. Then we can evaluate costs and benefits and the like.
But the election is just 7 months away, and the two conflicting narratives about the success or failure of MNsure are likely to be the subject of a lot of campaign talk between now and then. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Governor Dayton says he's concerned with the level of spending that Democrats who control the legislature have put forward in their respective budget plans. Dayton told reporters yesterday that he understands the desire by lawmakers to spend the state's surplus on worthwhile programs, but he said he wants to ensure the state continues to operate with a surplus after nearly a decade of constant deficits.
I don't question the wisdom or the value of almost every proposal that I'm aware of, but they add up to quite a bit of money.
Dayton and DFL leaders have already spent a chunk of the surplus when they passed a tax bill that cut $443 million in taxes. The governor has suggested spending $165 million from the projected surplus. The Senate passed a budget plan yesterday that spends $209 million. House Democrats passed a bill that spends $323 million. The budget plans will need to be reconciled in a conference committee. The Minnesota House has passed a bill supporters say will strengthen Minnesota's anti-bullying law. The Senate passed the bill last week, and it now goes to Governor Dayton for a signature. The bill requires all districts in the state to research and investigate cases of bullying and regularly train teachers and staff on how to prevent it. DFL Representative Jim Davney of Minneapolis is a supporter of the bill.
The bill provides students, teachers, parents, and administrators a strong set of tools to create their own local school anti-bullying policy.
Opponents say the measure creates burdensome requirements to investigate cases of bullying without funding from the state. Republican Representative Kathy Lohmer is concerned with language in the bill that presumes parents will be contacted if their child is being bullied or is accused of being a bully, but doesn't require it.
There's no requirement for anybody, from staff, bus drivers, anyone, to notify a parent if bullying is going on.
Governor Dayton says he will sign the anti-bullying bill this afternoon. The Metropolitan Council is expected to approve plans today for what would be the Twin Cities' third light rail transit line, connecting the urban core to the southwest suburbs. Then the focus of the roughly $1.7 billion Southwest LRT project will shift to the city of Minneapolis. City leaders need to sort out over the next few months whether they can support a contentious plan to send the passenger trains through tunnels beneath a wooded recreational corridor. Laura Ewan has more.
Advocates of the project are already making their pitch to Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges and other city leaders to soften their stance and get on board with Southwest LRT. While the light rail debate has largely focused on how to preserve the character of the leafy Kenilworth corridor and bike trail, social justice groups from the city's north side are sounding a different message about equity. Standing at a bus stop near Penn and Broadway Avenues, Isaiah President Reverend Paul Slack suggested the city use its leverage with the Metropolitan Council to exact some improvements for the community.
We believe that Minneapolis needs to say yes to the Southwest Light Rail being built out, and that Mayor Hodges, as well as Chair Haig and Hennepin County, need to come together and negotiate the benefits for all of Minneapolis.
Those benefits might include jobs, expanded bus lines that could ensure access to the train, and something as simple as bus shelters. The North Side groups have also floated the idea of streetcars, a system Minneapolis city leaders want, but have yet to find a way to pay for it. But trying to divine what will make Minneapolis happy has been difficult. At last week's advisory board meeting for the project, Mayor Hodges seemed to further entrench her position against the plan to send LRT trains through tunnels while keeping freight trains in the city's cherished Kenilworth corridor.
I will not, on behalf of my constituents, vote yes to lose on everything when there are other, better alternatives that we could and should pursue. I will be voting no.
Hodges believes the Met Council should still push to relocate the freight out of Kenilworth over the objections of the railroad company. A spokeswoman for Hodges says the mayor's position hasn't changed since last week. The Minneapolis City Council has echoed the mayor's concerns. Last month, it voted unanimously for a resolution against the tunnels. But there appear to be some cracks in the resolve. Councilmember Alondra Cano says she can't support the shallow tunnels today and still favors a freight reroute. But Cano says if Minneapolis eventually signs on to the light rail project, it should negotiate for additional concessions regarding racial equity.
I think some council members would be open to voting yes. I think other council members are going to vote no. And I don't know quite sure where the vote count lies today. But I do know that there's a strong voice for having more Minneapolis residents, more people of color, and more low-income communities get access to this transportation.
There appears to be ample room for negotiation as Minneapolis and the Met Council try to close the distance between them. Under state law, the Met Council must seek the support of all five cities touching the line, and the council, made up of members appointed by the governor, has never gone against the wishes of a city. Governor Mark Dayton has said he couldn't see the project going forward without Minneapolis's approval. Although the law allows a lengthy give-and-take process that could extend negotiations until the fall, the project faces a more pressing deadline at the end of June. That's when the county's Transit Improvement Board, which is expected to pay nearly a third of Southwest's $1.7 billion price tag, wants the affected cities to fall in line. With reporting from Curtis Gilbert, I'm Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
That's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.